Hello and welcome to the Propel Podcast. I'm your host, Tim East, and I'm thrilled to be here with you. I'm the Propel and International Workstream Lead, and I've spent years working at the intersection of healthcare and technology, and I'm passionate about how innovation is transforming healthcare and the way we live. This podcast is all about diving into the latest breakthroughs in health tech, hearing from the visionary leaders, shaping the industry, and exploring how cutting-edge solutions are improving patient care, wellness, and access to healthcare. Whether you're a healthcare professional, a tech enthusiast, or someone simply curious about the future of health, this podcast is for you. Each episode will bring you insightful conversations with experts, share inspiring stories of innovation, and highlight the trends that are making waves in health tech. In today's episode, I'm joined by Amanda Hay, the founder of Fix Your Future, a community interest company that focuses on empowering women, men, and learning disabled adults who have experienced domestic abuse. Its mission is to help individuals rebuild their confidence, self-worth, and control over their lives after enduring coercive relationships. By teaching her clients to become the scriptwriters of their own futures, Amanda encourages them to take charge of their personal narrative and overcome the trauma of abuse. Fix Your Future's core message is about reclaiming power and choosing one's own story, rather than letting anyone else dictate it. Amanda, thanks for joining us today and welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me and having me on.
Great. And whereabouts are you based?
My office is based now at Nexus in the Leeds, West Yorkshire area. I've been there for the past, well, it's been 12 months, 6 months with the Propel Accelerator and prior to that with the Innovative Entrepreneurs.
Okay, that sounds interesting. And just going into your journey and your background, so can you tell us about your journey into health tech? So what inspired you to work in this field?
Well, I am not techie whatsoever, which is strange in itself, but I have lived experience of domestic abuse and I knew that I wanted change for survivors to be able to heal. Me personally, took me many years, and actually the abuse that happened to me was 14 years prior, but I'd been going in a circle of unhealthy relationships, and I, in lockdown, ended up writing my book, my memoir, and in the back of there were all the self-help techniques that really supported me through my healing. And I knew that if there was myself like that going on this spiral of unhealthy relationships, and there must be so many more people it's also happening to. So for me, I just wanted to develop something that could ease that pressure, support healing again, and making something that was faster, you know, that could really bridge the trauma recovery through innovation and design it with the help of lots of other people, so survivors and therapists.
We see this quite a bit where innovators sort of fall into that area through their lived experience and I'm guessing wanting to help people.
Yeah, definitely. And it was, you know, really important part of my mission to then go, hang on a minute, how can I support other people with all these tools that I've learned personally? Not just that, you know, how many other people are just going in that revolving door constantly and have no way of moving through it.
Yeah, and we'll come on to your technology shortly, but so you're a startup, early stage innovator?
Yeah, an early stage innovator. I've been developing for the past couple of years now, and I think that in itself's been a whole learning process for me, because I set off on this journey thinking, okay, what can I develop? And it'd be developed next year, but oh no, it's far from that. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is the thing, building technology is an art within itself, isn't it? I suppose. You're an early stage innovator. What challenges do you face being an early stage entrepreneur? wanting to do good?
I think navigating the funding landscapes and just building those collaborations, which that took in itself 2 years just to navigate that and get that initial seed funding, because investors and funders look at you as too high risk. And so I've had lots of no's, lots of no's. So it's been about resilience and constantly knocking at people's doors until I get that yes. And I think that's been the strong part of what I'm doing, because I have eventually got the yes. But yeah, that's been the hardest part.
Mm-hmm. So we know building technology is really expensive, and you know it's probably going to be a while until you sort of commercialize it and start bringing revenue in as well. Has that been a challenge?
Yeah, because currently I'm funding myself to work. I'm using a bit of my pension, my early pension. I've just got some funding through Huddersfield University, and that came through the Innovative Entrepreneurs. And so now this year, I will be doing my first literature review, which finishes at the end of March. And so that will give me some real-time data. And fortunately, through that, I'm working with four different domestic abuse charities that will give me some real good data. And one of the domestic abuse charities has already said that they'd want to embed the software once it's fully developed.
Oh, that sounds really promising. And yeah, having that evidence, that's a key milestone, you know, with your journey moving forward.
Yeah, massive. It's massive. And it feels like I'm getting some traction now. Whereas before it was, you know, I felt like I was just getting lots and lots of no's. I think 2025 is going to be a really good year for Qkind Therapy.
That sounds good. And in terms of your company, your organisation, at the moment, is it just yourself, Amanda? Have you got any development teams? How does the organisation look?
Yeah, so I've got a development team who developed my initial prototype, which I've been testing at the moment with survivors. I'm using that prototype now to go into the domestic abuse charities. And actually, the software development team I met through Health Innovation Network, they were doing tours around the UK with Mindset, the Innovate Mindset. And so it was lots of VR organizations that were all coming together. And I met the software developers at that event who kindly offered to do a prototype for free. Because I think if I hadn't have got that, I would still be chasing my tail now. And, you know, there's lots of kind people out there. So it's just talking to people. And I think that was my strong point, of just going out there and speaking to as many people as I can.
Yeah, that's a key thing, I think, with innovators is that networking, that never underestimating the power of being in the room.
Yeah, it's so key. And yeah, I've now got my prototype from that. So yeah, it's great. And it means that I can move forward and I can get testing done. And my mission at the end of the day is to support as many survivors as I can. And I've always said 1 million, but last year I was like, no, sod it, 1 billion. Let's see if we can get 1 billion. But I mean, even 1 or 2 at the end of the day would be amazing.
Yeah, no, that sounds really powerful to know that you're supporting underrepresented group of society, would you say?
Absolutely. And through the innovation, what we're hoping to achieve is to reduce the times that people re-enter services. So survivors will re-enter services 32% return rate. You know, if we can halve that, that's halving their costs. That means that they can see more people, because we're not supporting people at crisis point. That's the job of the domestic abuse services. But we're really wanting to support that re-return rate once they've left their partners and they're at a stage where they may be re-entering those unhealthy relationships. We want to be that software that helps them not re-enter the services. And then obviously freeing up time for them to use that money more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. And do you know if the impact of citizens who've been through that, does it have a knock on their health and other areas as well, or social?
It's huge. Like, it's 66 billion it costs the UK economy every year. through courts, through getting them to safety, through return rates to services, police costs, housing costs. It's just a whole raft of government money that it costs for survivors to escape or flee their abusers. And so it's, you know, looking at how do we reduce those costs and how do we get survivors back on track so that they can find their purpose again in life. Like me, I guess, you know, that was my story, and that's why I'm so passionate about supporting more survivors on that journey.
Okay, so moving on to your technology and impact. So you mentioned it, VR. So can you share more about the technology that you've developed? So what does it do? What is it?
Okay, so we're currently, it's an AI therapist that will be immediate access. So therapy at the moment can cost anywhere from £77 to £150 per hour per session. And that's, you know, that's unaffordable for even you and I sometimes, you know, it's a big chunk of money. So imagine a survivor who has had economic abuse, and this AI therapist is immediate support. So they can get immediate support from wherever, whenever, and it will be multilingual and it will be accessible, especially for learning disabled survivors, because there isn't a lot of support in the UK for this community. And actually, they're probably more vulnerable than any community. You know, for them, A, just even understanding what abuse is, or might even not know that they're in an abusive relationship or support. So yeah, it's going to be accessible, multilingual, support from anywhere, but it will have lots of the mindfulness practices that I personally use within my healing journey, within the software. That's stuff that I know that works, and it will be co-created with survivors. So as it grows and as it develops, we'll be using the data from lots of various people with lived experience to then put back into the software so that we know it's purposeful.
Mm-hmm. And what are the outcomes from the citizen perspective that go through using the solution?
At the moment, because it's still in development stage, we're wanting to put it into healthcare eventually, and we're being supported at the moment to get it all through regulatory requirements. We want survivors to access it from anywhere and not fear that they have to go out to go see therapists, or it could be they fear stalking, you know, they've been stalked and they fear going out because of the stalking. So we wanted to make it so that it could be accessible from anywhere, but also, you know, the rural areas that don't have that support or can't get that support can access it from anywhere. But we're looking to either have it through GP practice, it could be through the healthcare, but it could be a wraparound service for domestic abuse charities as that interim whilst they're waiting. The wait list at the moment for domestic abuse services can be anything up from 18 months to 2 years. And so having that immediate support can hopefully save many lives.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And assuming it's going to help with managing that backlog or getting it to a manageable state through technology.
Yeah. Yeah. And healing faster. Virtual reality, I know that some of our competitors boast that it can reduce trauma time from 12 weeks to 2 weeks. So we want to be able to prove that through our software as well, that, you know, the healing is going to be faster.
So you mentioned it a little bit, Amanda, in terms of working with groups and organisations. How has that worked? Who are you working with at the moment?
So working with four different domestic abuse charities, and one in particular is Staying Put, that we met and collaborated through the Violence Reduction Unit. So I have been part of the VRU since September, and that was working with lots of different organisations that are working towards stopping violence within West Yorkshire. They were on the cohort, so I'm collaborating with them. I'm also collaborating with Mums in Need, which is a domestic abuse organisation in Sheffield, Behind Closed Doors, and Women's Whispers. So they're the four that we're working with currently.
Have they embraced what you're doing? You know, do they get what you're doing? Can they see the value in what you're doing as well?
Yeah, a lot of them have saw the value. We haven't actually started the trials with any of them yet. They will start February. So once we've done those trials, I guess that will really inform how we work and go forward with each of those organisations.
Okay. Yeah, no, that sounds good. And I think it demonstrates, like you say, the power of networking, but also especially within our region, West Yorkshire, you know, connected in to organisations that will support you along that.
Yeah, it's so important. Networking is the key to opening lots of doors, definitely.
Okay, Amanda, so navigating the healthcare ecosystem, regulations and market fit, how have you found navigating the regulatory environment?
It's thanks to the Propel, definitely, because I would not have met some of the partners that I've been introduced to through that programme. One of the partners, DigiSafe, did a competition before Christmas and we won, which is amazing, but that ensures our clinical safety and it helps us to navigate DCB01289, which is, it's a regulatory standard. So for those that understand clinical safety, they will know what that means. But basically, that has given us support to make sure that our software is regulatory compliant, and we're working with a clinical safety officer through that. And hopefully by the end of the year, the software will be clinically safe to use.
Yeah, that's a good news story, really. I mean, Propel's our accelerator program for anyone who's listening who doesn't know that. DigiSafe is an organisation that their expertise is clinical safety, which is obviously a really important thing for the NHS, but also yourself, Amanda, to make sure, you know, the product's safe, secure and gives confidence. So when you go to NHS organisations, it deals with the regulatory requirements.
Yeah, it's so important. And I think that opens doors for us, you know, into the NHS as well, which is incredible, you know, that we can say actually our software is safe for the use in the NHS service, which will be just incredible.
Yeah, that's really good news story, that. So have you done any engagement with clinicians or any other stakeholders about the solution?
A lot of therapists that I have spoke to already or tested with survivors. So responses from therapists have said that it would be a great tool as an add-on. So when they're turning people away from their service who can't afford, they've got an add-on service that they can say, well, actually, I do have this. That's a lot cheaper solution. And from survivors, mainly that they've really loved it and wanted to take it home and spend more time with it, which has been really positive. But I think the true data that I'll get will be over the next few months when we work alongside the domestic abuse charities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And in terms of your adoption and scale, so where you are today versus where you see yourself maybe in a year or a couple of years' time, what's your plan or what are your strategies for moving forward with that?
So my plan so far is to hopefully get to get the software into the first domestic abuse service so that it's working and it's fully utilised within their service, and then work eventually with the other three to do the same. Once that's done, we'd love to be UK-wide. We'd love to really work with more and more domestic abuse services, embed it into there, but hopefully as well, I'm using hopefully again, but yeah, into the NHS to collaborate with them and facilitate more trials and to increase visibility that way.
And in terms of industry trends, so what trends are you seeing in health tech that excite you through at the moment? So are you seeing more of a open door on solutions like this, or is there any other trends you're seeing?
I haven't seen a solution like this for survivors of domestic abuse. There are other services that are delivering trauma-informed support through VR, but nobody specific for survivors of domestic abuse. And I think that's why it makes our service so unique, because of that.
Yeah, you know, your offering stood out when we did our application process through our accelerator program. You know, we haven't really seen any solution that caters for that section of society. So that was a really important thing for us. Okay, how do you see the industry evolving in the next 5 to 10 years?
I think it's going to be massive, because it's still, even though it's been around, VR, virtual reality's been around for, is it about 10 years now? It's only really been used as health tech. Even just recently, I was speaking to a gentleman that said, wow, you know, for the virtual reality, I thought it was all gaming. You know, and so that it's, I think it's changing that public perception of what virtual reality can do. Because even now, you know, people think it's just for gaming. And actually, when you're in an immersive situation, it is so powerful. And I think, yeah, it's just raising awareness with the public. And I think even the tech's coming down in price as well, you know. From last year, they were $500 for the headsets. Now they're $300. So hopefully, you know, that price will keep coming down and it can be available for more and more of the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I remember in lockdown, my son has one of these Oculus Quest headsets, and actually I spent quite a bit of time on it. And I think YouTube's got like virtual reality videos, and you can walk around cities. And it is really immense, the environment that they bring to you.
It is. It's super powerful. I think until you've tried it, you don't understand the power that the immersion has. And I think that's why it has that super healing power of reducing that time scale from that 12-week period to the 2-week, you know. So I think it's just getting it out there and raising awareness, you know, to the public of actually the power of immersion and VR.
Yeah, yeah. So in terms of advice for innovators, so tips and insight, what advice would you give to any aspiring health tech innovators?
Oh, just for me, it was just knock on doors. Keep knocking. And even if you fail at one grant, luckily, I'm a grant and bid writer, so I have been able to just write my own, but I've had lots of no's. I remember last January crying, you know, because I'd had my heart set on getting this grant money. You know, you keep thinking, oh, God, do it. Should I keep going? But actually, it's that resilience. You need that resilience, and you need to just keep knocking and knocking and knocking. And I thought back to that last year, and I think there's so much money out there, actually, especially if for innovators doing something like this that can really help transform society. There's money out there. So even if one door shuts, there'll be another door that'll open. So I just think, yeah, keep knocking.
It's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? About it literally is a marathon. It's definitely not a sprint.
No.
Yeah. Okay, are there any resources or networks that were particularly helpful in your journey?
Oh, there's been so many. I mean, when I started out, I didn't even really know that I wanted to develop health tech. And I think just like you say, reaching out to people, I went on lots of accelerators and just networked with as many people as I can. I think recently the last two accelerators have been the ones that have really pushed me forward in this. And so I'm grateful to have had the chance to be on both of those. And the first one was the Innovative Entrepreneurs, and we managed to be on cohort one. Then being able to be accepted onto Propel was just incredible as well. So they're the two accelerators that have really, really helped me, you know, really move the needle for what I want to do. And so, yeah, just getting on as many accelerators as people can that are, you know, aligned with what you're doing just can really help you to move that needle as well.
Okay, that's great, Amanda. So we'll bring this to a close. It's been great speaking to you, hearing about your innovation, your journey, and I look forward to hearing about your future success and working with you in the future. So thank you very much, Amanda.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate being on the podcast, and hopefully we can support as many survivors as possible through the software. But yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks. Bye now.
In the next podcast, we'll be hearing from Michael Morgan Curran, the CEO of Asclepius MedTech, who are currently on the Propel program and have an innovation that's revolutionising preoperative surgical assessment by unleashing and unlocking the power of data.